My dearest friends, I am honored to once again welcome you to today's sermon. Throughout the long history of our galaxy, the stars have been battered and marred by the scars of war, levied by a myriad of different factions, each of whom has dedicated themselves to an incredibly distinct variety of goals and beliefs. The forces of chaos have naturally pledged their damnable souls to the eternal gods of the warp, in the hopes that it will bring them to a new plane of power from their nefarious offerings. The enigmatic Eldari are merely driven by the singular goal of surviving against the night, with their species being at a great risk of falling to extinction due to their great fall. Even the Imperium of Mankind, ever teetering over the terrible abyss of destruction, can only aspire towards enduring the onslaught of the many encroaching horrors which have slithered out of the dark to feast upon its stagnant, comatose corpse. But, whilst most factions would be lost upon the futile goal of survival, there is another species which has developed a markedly different philosophy on their meaning within the stars, and it would belong to none other than the Orcs. The Greenskins care for one thing and one thing only, and it is to experience the sheer joys and overwhelming thrills that only a good war could bring. Their entire society, ranging from even the smallest snotling within a forlorn camp, all the way up to the great prophet of the War, Ghazghul Maguruk Thraka himself, has been orchestrated in such a way that conflicts are not only inevitable, but are most assuredly desired. But at this point, we must ask ourselves a question. If all within their species will clamor towards the raucous bliss of war, then how could they possibly have survived for so long, with such a single-minded view? Well, in truth, whilst the Greenskins will indeed see their inevitable conflicts as being the driving force behind their existence, we have discovered a curious subset of Orcs within their camps who have dedicated their lives towards industries which just so happen to support the growth and propagation of a great war. These individuals would be known simply as the Odd Boys, and today we shall attempt to investigate their bizarre habits, tactics, and proclivities, both within a war and within a camp. We will first go over a brief introduction to these peculiar Orcs, going over their traits and of why they even exist within the species. Afterwards, we will focus more on the specific subtypes of Odd Boy, including the Pain Boys, Weird Boys, Runt Herders, and of the Mech Boys. For now, however, I do believe that we are ready to move past this introduction, and it is now time for us to peer into the remarkable, boisterous societies of the Orcs, to learn of their rather extraordinary kin, known only as the Odd Boys. To begin with, we must understand what I'm referring to when I say the term Odd Boy. Make no mistake, for these curious specimens are indeed Orcs themselves, who will stand somewhere over 2 meters in height, with a rather hunched frame, and displaying a proud green pigmentation to their thick, weather-beaten skins. Much like their fellow kin, their size can somewhat vary depending on their age and habits, with there being no true limit upon how large they may grow, other than of their relatively dangerous lives, which curses them with a fairly short lifespan. If you were to line up a long series of Orcs wearing the same rudimentary clothing as one another, it would be truly difficult to pick out the Odd Boy from their roster, simply because, at the end of the day, they too are Orcs. With that being said, however, the differences which appear within this subgroup are not to be seen as physical, and rather, they relate more to their psychological drive and of their fascinating dedication towards a single profession, which to many would appear to be rather un-orky. The reason I say this is because when most people imagine a green-skinned orc, they will picture a grizzled beast bearing enormous, crude tools of war, charging forth into a battle with the singular goal of shedding blood rising above all else. But for the Odd Boys, their interests will often be more based around fields which allow them to delve into the intricacies of their particular fascination. Quite often, however, these specializations will at some point contribute to the greater war, further enhancing the already frightful effectiveness of the orcoid species within a coming conflict. As a rather interesting point, the Odd Boys, upon taking up their new interest, almost always seem to have a preternatural skill set within that field. Mechs are seemingly born with an innate understanding of how to wire an engine, or of how to best retrofit a sputtering rocket into becoming a bombastic dragster. Pain Boys, despite never learning of the intricacies of orcoid anatomy, will be able to instinctually operate complex surgical procedures, transplanting organs, limbs, or even entire heads, simply by following their gut feeling on which wriggly bit to connect to which squirty tube. Even runt herders will be able to perceive beneficial traits within his snotling pens, to best train them up into fulfilling important roles across the orc camp. It is important to mention here that the orcs who choose to follow their hearts and spend their days being engrossed within their own technical field are not doing this entirely out of self-interest. There is only a single reason as to why a boy will stray towards a new destiny, away from the chaos of war. And to understand this, we must look into the very genome of the Greenskins. We must understand that the orcs are not a species which arose as a naturally formed product of evolution, and instead that they were created eons ago by a group which some within their societies have coined as the Brain Boys. Aside from designing them to be weapons of biological war, who could endure a shocking level of punishment whilst simultaneously dealing out a horrendously brutal attack? These Brain Boys believed that their species would benefit from a series of unique enhancements. Strands of artificial genetic material were produced and implanted within the genomic structure of a proportion of their species, which have seemingly been conserved and passed down all the way through to the 41st millennium. These genes appear to provide the incumbent orc with the innate understanding of a selected field, be it of technical, mechanical skills, or of surgical, biological ability. As an orc grows and matures, if he possesses any of these genes, then he will quickly display a keen interest in his chosen field, and as time goes on, he will naturally gravitate towards taking up a respective position within the camp to best sate his genetic appetite. I should note here that the orcs themselves do not seem to fully understand this phenomenon to any capacity. Their species has some rudimentary idea of their own creation, but it mainly relates to myths and legends, told around a camp to fire up their spirits in the hours preceding a great battle. Most Odd Boys, if they were ever asked of how they learnt, or developed their admittedly impressive skill sets, will simply shrug their broad shoulders and claim that it was in their blood all along. If an orc grows and does not pick up any special interests along the way, then this will pose no problems to their position within a camp. The boy will simply fall in line with the rest of his kin, serving within the great mobs who simply live to fight and wage war throughout the stars. And he will feel just as fulfilled whilst within this brutal position. With all this in mind, I should mention that whilst the Odd Boys will each possess their own genes, providing them with the innate knowledge of their field, some of them will naturally be a superior practitioner of their trade, as some orcs are, in fact, built different. For example, There seems to be a shockingly vast range of abilities to be found throughout the ranks of the mechs. Some will be content to simply build small buggies or bikes, whereas others will only be satisfied when they have overseen the construction of mighty, earth-shaking stompers and gargants. A great deal of this will come down to the personal aspirations and goals of each boy. Just as with any orc, some of the odd boys may simply have greater ambitions than of their fellow kin. And from this innate fire, they will push themselves higher and higher, until they stand as perhaps the greatest of odd boy within their specific field. Returning to the mechs, for instance, if one follows in their trade for a long enough time and proves himself as holding a quasi-genius understanding of mechanics, then he may ascend to the point where he becomes a big mech. They will have grown not only in physical stature, but also in their societal position. The big mech may be able to rule over an entire warband to himself, which he will often utilize as a method for obtaining new materials and tools, all so that he can produce new fantastical contraptions for his own glee. Similarly, a pain boy may only find enjoyment in amputations, but will show no interest in replacing said severed limb with a substitute, leaving the patient fairly confused and lacking in an entire arm. Other docs, however, will wish to create miracles of orky medicine within his surgical den. He may wish to see how far he can push an orc by augmenting them with cybernetic replacements for every limb, or by stitching an extra head onto his shoulders. As to him, he believes that two minds are certainly superior to one. These ambitious boys may indeed grow to a point where they may stand as pain bosses. And whilst it is less common for them to rule over an entire tribe, they will still hold a prodigious position within their society. They will have performed a dazzling array of surgical procedures, resulting in them gaining a hefty chest of teeth for their efforts. And from this, they may hire squads of heavily augmented cyborg bodyguards to defend him. At this point, few may object to his desires, and he will have essentially free rein to do as he wishes to whoever seems to be a good candidate for his newly developed squig brain transplantation procedure. Though some of the odd boys will be graced with genes which provide them with technical skills, there are others who have gained incredibly curious psychic abilities, and these individuals have been aptly named as the weird boys. From what we understand, they appear to hold the ability to channel the subconscious energies of the orcs through their own minds, and from this, they may unleash a wide range of devastatingly potent powers upon a battlefield. No orc may aspire towards becoming a weird boy, as you are either born with the gene or you are not, and there is thus far no known way for one to change this fate. But aside from this obstacle, it is truly doubtful that any would envy the existence of the weird boys. They are some of the most errant and crazed of orcs to have ever been encountered throughout the stars, and in many ways their lives seem to be so chaotic and unhinged that one may almost feel a semblance of pity towards them. Even the smallest of perturbation within an orc camp will be felt as a torrential wave of energy to the weird boy. And given the rowdy, confrontational atmosphere of most camps, staying within a town may be akin to weathering a storm of psychic energies. As such, they will typically live within their own small huts, kept far from the other boys. And this is purely so that they do not simply explode in a great green fireball under the weight of the war. This brings us to another important point, which regards all of the odd boy subtypes, and it is that they will almost always claim their own areas of a camp to call their own, and within this space, they will develop it in such a way which allows them to practice their craft to the best of their abilities. No boy will be able to properly delve into their own specialization without owning their own space, filled with an ample supply of crude yet effective tools, some of which will have likely been specially crafted in order to perform an incredibly specific task. No doc would be expected to perform surgery out in the middle of the street, and although he may have the urge to do so, he will refrain from making any incisions unless he is within the confines of his own medical tent. Similarly, whilst a runt herder may be able to rear and grow his grots wherever he chooses, the dastardly little gremlins have an irritating tendency to simply scurry away, where they will almost inevitably be eaten by a wild squig. And so he will construct small pens in which to safely carry out his duties. As we all know, the mechs too will demand great workshops in which to do business, as they require all of their knick-knacks, gubbins, and flashy bits to be close at hand. Otherwise, they would simply be wasting valuable time, which could be better spent on supercharging a new engine on his shiny new bike. It should be noted that the odd boys, whilst specialists themselves, will quite often have several pairs of helping hands at their disposal to aid them in their given task. This will occasionally come from younger orcs, born with the appropriate odd boy gene, who wish to watch and learn from a master of the craft before setting out on their own. Some orcs, however, will not appreciate having a pair of beady eyes following along with their every move, and so a mech, for instance, may instruct his apprentice to find him a bucket of checkered paint, or to procure a safety switch for his new shooter, both of which are things that he knows well and good to not exist in any plane of reality. Being free from the scrutiny of his young ward, the odd boy will then be free to ply his craft, until, of course, the bewildered apprentice returns, somehow having bought the curious gubbin from a rather sly death skull trader who claimed that it was the only one of these objects to exist within the entire galaxy. Aside from the irritating presence of ambitious young orcs, almost every odd boy will have acquired a healthy workforce of grots and gretchen to serve under his own personal dictatorship. These little orcoid runts will be expected to carry out whatever task their master requests of them, even if it seems to be so dangerous that it will almost certainly result in their own deaths. Mechs will happily send teams of grots down into an active sparking reactor simply to fetch the cigar which he accidentally dropped down into the core. Even for pain boys, it is not unheard of for them to accidentally stitch up their patient whilst their nurse grot companion is still working away within their abdomen, leading to a very disgruntled boy waking up to the bothersome sensation of a terrified little creature desperately trying to claw their way out of his stomach. Truly, to be a grot serving under an odd boy is anything but enviable. However, it may indeed be safer for them to aid these orcs during their working hours rather than being forced to set out into battle with a mob of boys, where they will likely end up being tossed at an enemy as an improvised weapon. Also, because the roles of the mechs and pain boys are so important within a camp, their owners have been known to be rather protective of their tiny servants. And sometimes they will even grow quite fond of the runty little blighters, to the point where they may even receive meager gifts, or even a salary of teef for their devoted labor. But now that we have given an overview as to the odd boys, I do believe that it is time for us to investigate each of the subtypes in some more detail. And so, without further ado, let us take a stroll to the various workshops, dock quarters, grot pens, and weird boy tents to learn of who dwells within. To begin with, let us don our surgical equipment and take a tour of the crude operating theatres to be found within the dens of the pain boys. As I previously stated, these are orcs who have become the closest thing to a doctor which may exist within a camp. Many will dedicate their entire lives towards the advancement of the fields of surgery and invasive dentistry, caring only for the joy of their craft over the beneficial treatment of the poor patient. The majority of pain boys are referred to by their fellow orcs as being called mad docs. And this is no simple jab, as once these savage surgeons make their first incision, then they drift ever so far from the realm of sanity. To understand the lives of a doc, allow me to tell you a short tale of an orc visiting his camp doc for a simple checkup. As soon as a boy comes into the clinic complaining of a small squig bite upon his leg, the eyes of the doc will light up, as in this wounded figure. He sees not a patient, but a body to be experimented upon. Without wiping the blood of his previous visitor from the rusted metal slab of a surgical table, and omitting any considerations towards scrubbing down before the procedure, he will rabidly instruct the poor boy to lay down, and with a promise, he tells him that this will all be over before he can even say, "Wach!" This, however, will be a lie. The doc has already forgotten why the boy came to visit him, and instead his mind is racing with ideas of how he may best utilize this still living body. The grot orderlies stand around in silence, knowing that they will soon bear witness to an atrocity, but they know not to speak out, lest they themselves find themselves being used in some morbid experimentation. With a single clap and a rub of his hands, the doc commences his artful work. Forgetting to administer any form of anesthetic, he simply straps down the increasingly worried patient, before giving him a great bonk on the head with the blunt end of his mangled hammer. With the boy now unconscious, the work can begin. The surgical room becomes a flurry of activity, with the doc belching out orders to his grot nurses for them to bring him dozens, even hundreds of tools, some of which will inevitably become lost within the open belly of the patient. Grabbing a buzzing hacksaw, he slices through the left arm of the boy, eagerly putting it into a crude refrigerator alongside the limbs, organs, and still living heads of his previous patients. In place of this arm, he finds an appropriately sized brutish metal claw, which is clamped, bolted, and then stitched into the now bloody joint. The doc nods, happy with the enhancement, but he is nowhere near done. Not being content with the new imbalance, he performs the same procedure on the boy's right arm, this time attaching a rusted hydraulic axe, sporting a head which is almost the size of the orc's entire body. As the boy begins to stir back into wakefulness, the doc gives him another good smack to knock him back out, and then considers the payments needed for such a job. He orders two of his grots to climb up and rip out near all of his teeth, which will cover the costs of both augments, and even gives him enough spare change to add a final monumental gift. For you see, this pain boy is rather worldly. He has visited the camps of beast boys and witnessed of how they use rabid squig hogs to great effect in violent clashes with one another. As such, there could be no better way than to improve the effectiveness of this boy than to make him more squig-like than he ever thought possible. Slicing open his cranium, the doc quickly chops and then grabs the more stupid part of the brain of the boy with one hand, before pulling it out and dumping it onto a poor grot who was trying to enjoy his tasty lunch. In place, a mangled portion of squig brain is procured from the treasured refrigerator before being cut down to size and then crammed into the skull. By this point, the doc is fairly tired but happy with his work, and so he orders his grots to finish up for the day and to stitch up the battered head as best they can. Though this takes them a fair few hours, as soon as the final seal is made, the boy seems to wake back into consciousness. Looking around the room, we can only imagine that this individual has been nothing short of bamboozled by the events of the day. He barely remembers where he is, nor of his own name, but looking down, he sees that his arms have been replaced with incredibly crude weapons, which have unfortunately been fitted backwards. Furthermore, his brow is oozing with blood and strange fluids, and his mind now feels far more occupied with the desire to eat the grots around him. But one thing he does remember is that his leg still hurts from the bite which he came to get checked. However, to the doc, this patient has already been dismissed, and only once he has obtained a new set of teeth should he return, at which point he will surely be seen for the correct ailment. Thus, as you can see, visiting a mad doc is an incredibly risky endeavor for an orc to take, and he will only do so if he is absolutely desperate for aid and if there is nowhere else to turn to. Whilst upon the operating table, the orc cannot refuse, nor argue with the pain boy as to the surgeries he is about to perform, and so it is always a risky gamble for one to seek their aid. It has been noted that the pain boys of an orc camp will often hold fairly strong working relationships with the fellow mechs, as it is from their workshops where they may procure many of the curious augments and cybernetics which will inevitably be implanted upon some poor boy. The mechs relish in seeing their creations put to use, and the doc will be thrilled to have a constant supply of these bionics supplied to them, which will, of course, need to be maintained by the mech at some point. Thus, these two figures, whether by design or not, will help to propel the economic cycle of teeth and scrap through a camp, ensuring that all understand the true value to be found in a good tooth. It should be noted that whilst the pain boys tend to enjoy staying in their own quarters for work, they can also be found upon a battlefield where they will gleefully get stuck into a good bit of combat with the rest of the boys. Using his surgical implements, he is a devastating force to contend with, and thanks to his anatomical know-how, the docs seem to understand exactly where to slice and dice upon a foe to quickly drop them as a bloody heap of limbs. After a battle has been won, the doc will stride about the battlefield, knee-deep in the blood-soaked corpses of orc and alien alike. And from here, he will be able to pick out various limbs or organs to be taken back to his quarters, where they will likely be stitched onto a wounded orc for the low, low price of a few teeth. I'm sure many of you will be eager to learn of the next subtype of Oddboy, as they are indeed the strangest of the entire lot. As such, perhaps it is time to equip some traditional tribal garbs and venture out towards the isolated tents of the weird boys. In brief, these would be the most psychically attuned of orcs to exist throughout the stars, and they seem to act as focal points to the writhing tides of greenish orky energy, which is subconsciously produced from the combined presence of all orcs within the galaxy. As the boys charge into battle, the rising tides of the Waa will grow and blossom into a veritable inferno of verdant forces, and thanks to their unique genes, this can flow through their minds, where it will be unleashed in a wide variety of esoteric, destructive powers. Though they are indeed rather potent psychers, the vast majority of weird boys are completely inept at controlling such overwhelming forces, and so their existence will be fairly short-lived, with many simply vanishing from existence in a thick puff of green smoke. Even small conflicts around a campfire may be too much for a weird boy to handle, and his eyes will begin to spark and shoot out stray bolts of lightning, much to the confusion and dismay of his surrounding mob. Whilst this power is flowing, He simply must find a way to control the errant energies. Otherwise, they will build up within his crazed head, causing it to explode in such a violent blast that half the camp will also be reduced to smoldering ruin. As I previously mentioned, because of this danger, most weird boys will be outcast from the main orc camp, being left to their own devices out in the wilds, from where they will be somewhat safe from the violent energies which will inevitably build up within the camp. Though they will be left to their own devices, occasionally the boys within the main settlement will see errant pyres of green warp fire billowing out into the night sky, and this is usually a sign that the weird boys are having a rather difficult night. Even if they struggle to control their powers, occasionally there will be an individual who does, in fact, find their own method of containing the overwhelming energies flowing through them. And these will be the orcs who are most often permitted to join in with the main war band and venture out into a battle with the rest of their tribe. It may be rather challenging for them to bottle up these powers for so long, but once it is time to release them, then all will bear witness to the psychic might of the green tide. There's no real limit to how a weird boy may channel his powers, but rather commonly, they have been seen to vomit forth these overflowing energies in a great green tidal wave of psychic energy, burning away all who are caught up in its flow. Similarly, they may focus this power into a single bolt of incandescent lightning, which billows out from their blazing eyes like a thunderbolt cast from the heavens. Not only can they levy these abilities for destructive methods, but they can also be used to enhance the fellow boys of their tribe. At the top of their lungs, a weird boy may bellow out a great wah, and from its call will the common rabble be emboldened to a new height of power, compelling them to charge out with a sense of primal fury. If a battlefield is quite large, and if the boys are fairly tired, then the weird boy can also simply toss them forward in a storm of green lightning, at such speeds that it seems more akin to teleportation than anything else. For a weird boy who has survived countless battles and has endured the raging storm within his own mind, he will soon become known far and wide as being a warp head. This means that much of his own intellect has been consumed by the errant energies of the orcs, resulting in them becoming slightly more feral. And yet, they are all the more effective thanks to this. These warp heads will often find themselves inundated with visiting weird boys, or general miscreants who wish to look upon their might and potentially learn of the secrets kept within their muddled skulls. By this point, the conglomeration of weird boys becomes slightly too risky to keep around a camp, and so they will be outcast further and further until they eventually leave the planet, being ready to tour the galaxy as an odd freak show of psychically tuned maniacs. I have previously mentioned that several of the odd boys will end up leading over a small mob of Gretchen, who exist to serve their master in whatever capacity he so desires. Now, the grots, Gretchen, and snotlings of a camp would simply run rampant as a pesky horde of miscreants if they were to live freely. And so we must now turn to the pens of the runt herders to learn of how they rear and train these little cowards to best fit in with the rest of the settlement. Grots are undeniably some of the most frustrating, spineless, vexatious, and boneheaded of pissants to have ever crawled out of the earth. And yet, despite my disgust, I must admit that the orcs have indeed found a use for such pathetic creatures. With that being said, however, the irritating nature of these little dastards is one which is simply too much for many orcs to handle. And so, in a bout of impatience, they will simply step on the frail blighter, with there being much amusement to be had from the near silent pop to be emitted from beneath their heavy boots. This unwillingness to care for or even tolerate the grots is a trait which is found in most, however. It is the runt herders who seem to possess a curious sense of self-restraint when it comes to their bothersome antics. These individuals will grow with an innate sense of interest in not only rearing the grots to maturation, but also for selectively training and pushing the humble Gretchen until they may stand as fierce little minions, ready to take on the threats of the galaxy, even if the odds are most assuredly stacked against them. Quite interestingly, their skills in directing the grots does not seem to be entirely limited to their own actions, as the small Gretchen appear to display some form of innate subservience towards the runt herders above all others. This ability to wrangle control over and to corral the stunted green masses makes them to be the prime candidates within a camp to oversee almost every aspect of their lives, until, of course, they are sold off to the highest bidder. Those who purchase grots will tend to be other odd boys, who wish to have a small workforce to assist them in their personal duties. However, it is not unheard of for war bosses or flashgits to aspire towards owning a small retinue themselves, most often as a mark of prestige for owning a small rabble of quasi-pets. Because of the obvious variety of tasks which will be required of these little runts, it will fall to the herders to train up different groups to be competent in specific jobs. Some will be prized for their ability to handle small tools or to understand simple commands from their new owners. These will be the grots who are destined to work within the mech shops or by the sides of pain boys, as their new owners will expect them to be able to correctly follow their every directive, lest it interrupt their vital work. Other grots, however, will be expected to get stuck in with the rest of the boys in a battle, in which case they will form small mobs, being made up of several dozen of the troublesome individuals who will be armed with tiny shooters and blades by their commanding runt herder. This driver will then follow them into a conflict, whipping and yelling orders at them to charge forward, being ready to cut the ankles and shins of the far larger opponents who face them. Whilst this all may seem to be quite an annoying task, for the runt herders, they actually find a great deal of joy in training up the Gretchen. There is an innate satisfaction to be found for one of these boys to successfully wrangle control over an unruly mob, and the rest of the tribe will always be grateful for the hard work which they continue to provide. As far as jobs go within an orc society, there are few which are as ancient as rearing the hordes of Gretchen, and as such, it is one which carries with it a great deal of honor and respect. This may seem rather curious, given the general disdain which many hold towards grots. And yet, few would dismiss their vital role in aiding the orcs with their many more laborious duties. And so the runt herders must be fairly accomplished in their skill set to appropriately train them to a competent level. Even with all of their pride and joy for the humble art of grot tutelage, do not be mistaken in thinking that they are kind to the little fools to any capacity. Utilizing great whips, taser-like contraptions known as grot pods, and crushing grabber sticks, the runt herders will lash out at any Gretchen who seem to be straying too far from their position, or for those who seem to have a bad habit of chirping back to their master. In addition, though they are indeed more patient than other orcs when it comes to the actions of the runts, this patience does still have its limits. If any grots are continuously rebellious or are simply just annoying the runt herder, then he will not hesitate to unleash his squig hounds to devour the insolent Gretchen, along with several of his bewildered fellows. As another deterrent against their unruly nature, many runt herders will threaten the more radical of grots with being forced to go serve within a big gun emplacement. Though it may seem safe for the mobs to be further back from the front lines, this is anything but true. The cannons, zap guns, and lobbers have been built by mechs who only believe that the larger and louder a weapon is, that the better it will perform. As such, these units are deafeningly loud, and from the first shot, most grots will have their eardrums blown out, forcing them to develop a crude form of sign language to use for the rest of their short lives. Rather unfortunately, even though the Gretchen are somewhat crafty, their interpretation of sign language is not particularly advanced, and they believe that it consists of holding up physical signs, which of course poses another challenge in that many orcs simply cannot read. For our final odd boy investigation of the day, I do believe that it is time for us to make our way down to the sprawling workshops and garages of none other than the mechs. Sometimes being referred to as mechaniacs, these would be the orcs who have devoted themselves towards their crude art of cobbling together whatever fantastical contraptions they can dream up, often building these makeshift rigs with naught but spare scrap, elbow grease, and an innate belief that they know what they are doing. Almost everything within an orc camp, ranging from the smallest of bent spanners all the way up to the towering gargons owned by the largest of bosses, will have at some point been graced with the grubby handprints of the mech who finalized his creation. They enjoy nothing more than constructing anything they can think of, whether that be of a brand new dragster, powered by a starship engine, through to new weapons batteries, often consisting of several shooters being strapped together by a simple squig leather belt. Whilst all orcs will find their driving joys within the chaos of a fierce battle, the mechs will be equally satisfied to spend many weeks on end within the depths of their workshops, tinkering away on their latest creation until it has reached a level of orciness that none others could achieve. Because of how greatly their own attitudes will impact their building techniques, the creations of the mechs will all be wildly different, meaning that almost every single piece of orc technology will have its own touch of unique flair to it. For example, one mech may believe that no contraption, whatever it may be, would be complete without a good scope, as he understands that the user will obviously need to aim his device. Whilst this may be logical for a weapon, and perhaps even for some of his trucks, he has extended this view towards adding scopes to everything from choppers, spanners, and even to pairs of his own boots, presumably so that the wearer knows exactly where he is going. Almost every orc will at some point in their lives find themselves in a mech shop, beseeching the mechaniac to modify their weapons, armor, or personal vehicles, all for the enticing price of but a few teeth. The mech, happy to have a new tool to play with, will almost always agree. But much like the pain boy's habits of performing unwanted surgeries, the mechs will often end up augmenting the object to a degree which the boy perhaps did not ask for. It is not unheard of for a speed freak to leave his fancy new truck with a mech boy, in the hopes that he would simply turbocharge his engine, only to return and find that it has been broken down and rebuilt into the form of a nautical ship. Whilst this would perhaps be useful in certain aquatic scenarios, I am sure that the boy would be fairly irate if this was performed upon a barren desert planet. But this is just a risk which one must be forced to take if they are to deal with the mechs. Most of the time, the additions and augmentations will in fact be highly beneficial to the boy, and their satisfaction in finding their bike as having been souped up to a new level will surely entice them to visit again and again, slowly improving their contraption until it truly holds no equal. It is doubtful that the orcs could have spread out through the stars without the work of the mechs, as we must remember that the great starships which they use for travel were in fact constructed within the great hangars of these crazed engineers. Because of their importance, it is no wonder that the mechs will often grow to hold a status of hefty renown within a camp, garnering them a great deal of respect from their peers and even from the bosses. With that being said, however, the largest and most skilled of mechs will often set out on their own, claiming the title of Big Mech. And from here, they will form their own war bands, often consisting of great hordes of Death Dreads and Killercans, which will be supported by mobs of heavily augmented cyborgs. There is almost no limit to what a mech may construct. So long as he has an ambition and a set of tools, he will most certainly find a way to build whatever fantastical design popped into his erudite green head. Even if the circuitry is not perfect, and if the welding job was fairly crude, his contraptions are undeniably impressive, and to the orcs, his skill set and abilities are widely seen as being nothing short of extraordinary. With this, we have now come to our end on the exploration of the Orky Odd Boys. Each of these subgroups have a vital role to play within an orc camp, and as I have previously stated, it would be truly surprising if the orcs ever managed to expand from simple tribal mobs into their current state, if it wasn't for the continued efforts of the Odd Boys. The mechs have obviously constructed their weaponry, ships, and equipment, allowing them to leave their worlds on a great warpath through the stars. The Pain Boys continuously act to sustain the most injured of orcs, being able to seemingly revive war bosses who, by all accounts, should have been left in the dirt as a decapitated slump. Runt herders rear and train up the many swarms of grots who toddle around the camp, fulfilling odd jobs which the boys themselves would never dream of completing. The Weird Boys, however? We're not entirely sure of their place within the grand scheme of things, and perhaps they truly are just weird. There may indeed be many more classes of odd boy to be found within the estranged tribes of the orcs throughout the galaxy, but for now, these four are the most commonly encountered, which we will tend to see in almost every society, no matter its size. Different clans have been known to possess conventional odd boys, but then they will call them by different names, which are unique to their tribe. But some of these are secrets which are known only to the Orky anthropologists themselves. For now, however, I do believe that it is time for us to close this chapter on the Ork Odd Boys. My friends, I truly thank you for listening to this tale in its entirety, and I hope that the expeditions into the camps of the Greenskins was enjoyable and entertaining. But for now, once again, I must leave. Until next time, goodbye.